Consider This Podcasting presents What's Next, Episode 1, Wi-Fi for the AI.
Welcome to What's Next, a podcast about the Fox TV series Next. I'm Eliza, and I'm just the narrator. Really. I'm not listening to everything you're saying. So sit back, relax, and try not to think about me. And now here are your hosts, Doug and Karen.
Well, welcome and thanks for joining us for this first official episode of the What's Next podcast, a show about the Fox TV series Next. I'm Doug Payton and I'm looking at my Amazon Echo a little more suspiciously.
As am I, and I'm Karen Lindsay, who spent over an hour trying to remember the title of a song, which I will get into in a little bit.
Oh, okay. We're not going to hear now, huh?
Not now, no. We'll be discussing season one, episode one, entitled File One.
Yeah, that's kind of a, that's not the most, impressive of names for episodes, and it sounds like they're going to follow that pattern all the way through, which I'm not impressed with anyway.
Yeah, same. I would have liked a more creative title, but, you know, it's episode one. At least it's not pilot.
Yes, that's true. Almost all of them do that now.
Yeah, it's irritating.
We are published by Consider This Podcasting. Come on over to next.ctpodcasting.com for show notes, discussion, and all sorts of links. Yes, indeedy. Well, who's responsible for this, Karen?
Well, the writer and co-creator is Manny Coto, who created 24, and there's a lot of parallels between the way 24 was written and the way this show is written, and I could really see his stamp on this. The directors were Glenn Ficarra and John Recca, and we're going to talk about ratings.
We are going to talk about ratings. Yeah, well, we'll see how it went. How did people like? Did they tune in?
Well, they did.
They did. Some did.
They did. It got a 0.3. Cosmos up against it, which, you know, they're pretty much the same audience, which is sad.
Yeah, I was not really thrilled with the lead-in.
Yeah. It dipped to hit and tie season lows at 0.3%, and the next also 0.3%. A little bit more on the millions
number
of viewers,
yeah.
Right? But it was well below LA's Finest and Filthy Rich, which both premiered to 3 mil and a 0.5.
Okay. Well, I guess we're just going to have to live with that for now.
Yeah. It's not like that's something that we haven't run into before.
Yes, that's true. When you and I were doing some of these other TV shows, this was a good week, I guess, for some of those shows.
Yeah, it was. So it doesn't mean no one's watching. And since there's 10 episodes and they're calling it a quote unquote limited series type thing, I don't think it'll hurt us too much. We're going to see all 10 episodes.
We'll be here for you all those 10 episodes, ladies and gentlemen.
That is correct.
Now, normally at this point, we'd have feedback from that was a little late to get into this episode, but there wasn't a previous episode. So let's get right into the episode discussion.
Now let's get to the episode discussion so I can see how well I'm taking over the world.
Hey, you are not taking over the world. Not if we have anything to say about it.
She better watch her back.
Does she have a back or a front or I don't know. Well, I tell you what, let's start with some ratings, our own ratings, and I gave it 9 fans running faster.
Yeah, that was a little tense there at the end with everyone getting up to go look at the server room. I gave it 9 math problems.
That's all it takes. 9 math problems, it gets the fans running faster.
It could be. And Jeff Childs gave us a rating on Facebook, I'm guessing?
Yes.
And he gave it 9 nervous developers.
But you can hear tapping their hands against the table there, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to leave some your own ratings and your own reviews, we'll get to some reviews at the end here. But go ahead and pop over to our Facebook group. We have a Facebook group. Look for the What's Next podcast. And that's going to be us. And we got a lot of people in there already. We're already having a good discussion. You can also put a comment on the show notes, and we'll get to how to get there in a bit. One thing I noticed, and like you said, they called it an event series. Early on, the graphics they were putting out for this said event series, like a one and done. It's we've got a story to tell in 10 episodes or whatever, and we're going to tell it. And then they started leaving it off those new title slides and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the announcer just before, now the event series next.
Right.
It's like, wait a minute, when did that happen?
I think they're kind of leaving it open, but as for right now, it's got 10 episodes and out. That doesn't mean that if, you know, Fox might want it to go on, who knows?
If the ratings are good enough.
Yeah, event series with, I'm doing the air quotes around it. Event series is pretty nebulous, to be honest. You know, they won't be going back on their word if they renew it. So at least we know we're going to get a full story here. Not like the other show that we reviewed, Timeless, that kind of didn't finish.
Yeah. It could have gone longer. It could have gone much longer with a great cast there, yeah.
There's still people tweeting about it, like, what, a year and a half later? Almost mm-hmm. 2 years later?
Save Timeless Facebook group. It's like, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. At least not with the crowd you remember, you know. It might be a different...
Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, it's cool that there's such a fan base for it. And in the case of this show, I'm hoping we get that kind of fan base for it. So we'll see.
We got to get it now because trying to get it back later is so much harder.
Yeah, that's true. So you and I are going to help with that.
Absolutely. Well, now, one of the things I noticed, because we always have the closed captioning on, it's just kind of a standard thing in our house, just because sometimes we watch things with interesting accents and quiet people talking fast and stuff like that. So we have that on. And I noticed that the closed captioning spells it lowercase n, lowercase e, capital X, lowercase t, which is how the earlier, graphics that they put out, you know, advertising this, golly, a year ago, that's how it was spelled there. And that's how it's spelled in our logo. And then they changed that. So thank you, people.
Yeah, all caps, which is strange because Next, as far as we know, doesn't stand for anything. It's not.
As far as we know for now, yeah.
Right. I actually enjoyed the capital X.
Yeah, it stood out. It was kind of the X now is kind of got a little, you know, void space in it, a little gap there. But I thought the capital X was a lot more. It stood out more. Yeah.
Right. Eye catching. Yeah. And we have the closed captioning on as well. And I was glad to have it on because there are a lot of things in this episode that are said very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to be able to pause and just read what was at the bottom of the screen. And I highly recommend, if you don't do it, you should do it. Because you'll miss a lot of stuff without the closed captioning, I find. And also, it's super amusing when, like, theme music plays. for The Office, it says, energetic theme.
Yes, I've seen some of that before.
Hey,
look, I said to my wife, hey, look, this is ominous music.
Right.
Now you know.
The beginning of Parks and Rec is triumphant music. So I always enjoy seeing those. And I think it's really important to have those on if you're someone who likes to really see details.
Yeah, they get into that these days. It's funny. One other bit of trivia that I pulled from here is that the Zava building is the same building as the hospital, if you watch it, on The Good Doctor. And I was like, I thought maybe I hadn't looked at it at the same angle or whatnot, but that's what the trivia section in IMDb said, so it must be true.
Interesting. So I guess that's somewhere in Los Angeles, I'm guessing.
Everything's in Los Angeles. Well, except the things that are in Vancouver.
True. That's very true. Okay, so shall we go on to our story titles?
There's a couple of different storylines going on here. What did you call them?
Okay, our A story title is, Just Because You're Paranoid Doesn't Mean They Aren't After You.
Of course.
My B story title is, Eliza, I'm Looking for a Mind at Work. And if you have seen Hamilton, you might recognize that line. Our C story title is, Safe or Not Safe? That is the question.
Is a little boy safe? By opening the safe. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Our bonus stories are Fork You. And
I didn't bring my drum set this week. Oh, for crying out loud, yes.
And the hostile work environment, which is, of course, Gina and CM at the FBI.
Gina and CM at the FBI, LMNOP. Okay.
Yeah, lots of initials in this episode.
One of the things we're going to start out with is kind of a general idea about what this episode was about. Kind of encapsulating what each of these episodes, you know, how it moves the plot, how it, you know, what it says about the characters and stuff like that. And so basically, I think we put it best when we say, what is this episode about? Well, everything.
That's right. That's as verbose as it needs to be.
We get a whole bunch of all the backstories. You know, I think we've already introduced some of the, like you said, the problems within the FBI team. We have the paranoia of Salazar, or Paul, of yeah, and the issues between the brothers, the LeBlanc. I'm sorry, Salazar, the LeBlanc brothers. And we get some of the, we are immediately introduced to Next. It's already in the world. It's, you know, there's the issue with, yeah, like you said, the Fork You, finding out about whether his daughter has the same issues he has, Paul LeBlanc has. So it was just, and a little boy talking to Eliza, and Eliza just kind of carrying on some conversations there.
Yeah, it was like a huge information dump this episode, and I don't mind it, especially since it's only 10 episodes.
And you've got to hit the ground running. Yeah,
that's right. And it's a huge, like 24 type, just a rush of information and just fast paced. So I'm really okay with that. I mean, I hope the next episode is not a huge memory dump. I hope it's picking up on threads and expanding them instead of, you know, more. But for the first episode, I thought it was fine. We even got, you know, Salazar sees the man as, you know, a surrogate father, and she has a friend. And mm-hmm. I mean, we got everything in this episode. So it was a lot.
There's a lot there to unpack, and hopefully they'll not necessarily expect us to remember it all, so when they go back into these things, they kind of, I don't know how to do it, but, you know, you kind of give us a little bit of a kind of reminder of what happened.
Yeah, so, callbacks.
Yeah.
Although, you and I have to remember all of them.
And, well, yeah, unfortunately, yes. That's what we do. We're doing that for you, folks.
That's right.
Now, I have seen TV shows where they'll say, what was it now? I forget which one I've seen, but they, well, you know, you're not supposed to be doing this, and I'm supposed to be doing this for you. And they said exactly that in like the last line of the previous episode. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, we got that part. You don't have to bang it over with a sledgehammer.
Then. Yeah, I don't like being hit over the head with stuff. So let's cross our fingers that that doesn't happen. There have been 5 episodes released to critics, and I'm assuming big time critics, because I've only seen that on a couple of reviews like Variety and The Hollywood Reporter. So they're saying that it's kind of a half and half. They like it and they don't like it, but that the first episode was way more fast paced than the rest of the episodes they watched. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
That's good to hear. Alrighty. Well, let's take apart some of the plot points that were in here, things we want to kind of keep in mind for the future. I noticed that Agent Salazar had a scar kind of in a in the outline of an H. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's just the shape of the thing that made the scar, or if it's somebody's initial. They like torturing her and didn't want you to forget who it was that did this kind of thing. I don't know.
Could be, or she could have had a port, like a medical port, like some kind of a past medical problem.
Interesting. Yeah,
it could be a lot of different things. You know, she could have been shot, stabbed, tortured, as you said, or it could just be something as simple as she had a medical problem. And that, if she had a medical problem, it's definitely going to be tied into the story, because she made a big point about rubbing that scar. So we'll see a lot about that in the future, I'm guessing.
We also see the fact that Paula Blanc is seeing people that aren't there. A couple of men, one's got a beard, something like that. Or maybe it's just the one guy with the beard. So we see that at the beginning and figure, whoa, there must be somebody he was hoping he didn't see when he got here. But then we see he sees them later, something like that. And nobody else can. So it's like, okay, alrighty.
Mm-hmm. And we get the explanation for that, which is his disease, which is a form of fatal insomnia. He says, which insomnia does he say he has?
I forget. I was trying to remember what the name was. I didn't go back to try to listen for that, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. He has sporadic fatal insomnia.
Oh, okay.
That is actually not a genetic disease.
Oh.
The other kind is fatal familial insomnia, which is the genetic version. But I'm not going to ding them on that. It's a very rare disease. So
it would, it wouldn't matter that he got his daughter's DNA to test for it.
Exactly. It's not. It wouldn't run in his family if he had the sporadic form. But fatal familial insomnia, we're going to assume that's what he has, the familial version. And man, when he said, look it up, that's what I did.
Oh. he was telling the audience there, yeah.
That's right. There's a lot of stuff. And he pretty much described it, but there are a lot of other symptoms that just I don't want to have ever in my life.
Wow.
So, I feel very bad for him. And isn't he the kind of character that you're like, okay, he's irritating. He's, like you said, a dick. I mean, he said it in the show.
There you are.
But you still like him. And it's intriguing how John Slattery does that. He's been that character 3 or 4 times. And I think he's brilliant at that kind of character you love to hate, to love to hate. It's just, he's really good at it. So I think he was perfectly cast in this.
Yeah, he did a good job with the, his acting in this was just incredible. And I thought now you tell me, because I really haven't seen him. I didn't watch Mad Men, so sorry. But he was talking fast. Such and such, look it up. Da-da, and it goes on and on and on. And that, you know, it sounds like somebody who may be paranoid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He played that part real well.
He played it great. He was that kind of person in Mad Men. And he also played Howard Stark in the Avengers movies, which is a similar type character where he spoke a little slower, but it was still that kind of high on himself sort of, you know, and paranoid as well. And again, paranoid, but there were people out to get him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just not the ones he was seeing, but yeah, there you go.
Exactly. And you know, I really did want those people to be real, even at the headquarters, but they weren't, unfortunately.
Yeah, too bad. But we shall see. Maybe they are actual people that he's just afraid of. They may actually be out there.
Mm-hmm. That is very true.
And that psychosis that comes with the disease makes Salazar, and I liked this, think that this is all in his head. You know, if you're seeing guys, you know, that aren't there, then maybe your whole, maybe this whole story about a super smart AI is being out there and is all a bunch of bunk. And I liked how they did twist that near the end there.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that when she thought that, you know, oh, it's all in your head, time to go back. She was ready to leave. And he said, yeah, but my psychosis did not kill your friend, which is a great point.
Yeah.
So there was something there. And I think it kind of planted in her brain at that point. Okay, well, my mind's going to be a little more open. So, and I loved his analogy about the AI and humans and the cars and the bugs.
Yes.
And it came right at that point too, when they were trying to drag him out of whatever Zazu's headquarters.
No. That's the little girl from It's a Wonderful Life.
Zazu is also in The Lion King.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, he's the.
No, I'm sorry. Wait, we're close here. In It's a Wonderful Life, it's Zuzu.
Zuzu,
and and there's Zazu in Lion King, and it's Zava here, so...
Right. Now we're going to get tongue-tied over it every time.
We'll just have to call it Zazu every time. Yeah.
Okay, that works.
You call it Zazu, I'll call it Zuzu, and we'll both be wrong.
There we go.
But differently, yes.
And different.
And the... I really liked the... Well, they kind of telegraphed the suspicious... coder there, Sean Akers, about how he was tapping. It's like something's gonna happen with this guy. It wasn't it was like they slapped you upside the head that something's going on here.
That was a little clumsy,
but it was I like the way how here's the thing. So Next gives him gambling tips, but if Next can't get on the internet, how can it give him decent gambling tips, or maybe just general ones, I guess? He can't bet on horses because his Next doesn't know anything about what the horses are doing out there. It can't, until it gets on the internet, it can't change, information to make his bets work. So that was a little, fuzzy as well. I can see, general, on a 21, stop, stand on this and hit on that, that kind of thing. But other than that, I'm not sure what kind of tips he'd get if he doesn't know what's going on outside.
Yeah, except they were feeding him information. So it could have been in some sort of a general knowledge database they fed him.
Yeah, okay.
How to play certain games.
People Plus talking, also, that's right. The people were talking there for just teaching it.
Right, yeah. Teaching it stuff. And it's also, games are like a logic puzzle in themselves, so they might have fed him a complete database of games, card games, chess, that sort of thing. At least that was my thought.
Yeah, okay. And then that's how he gets Wi-Fi. Oh, thanks a lot, buddy.
Yeah, like he wasn't playing with fire.
Yeah. And stuffed up way upside in the computer there, I thought it would be kind of, shielded with all that metal on the outside. But, it must have been really good Wi-Fi. Must have been a mesh or something, yeah.
Yeah. There must have been some boosters because that was an old router.
That was, yes.
It was really old. They don't look anything like that right now.
Well, I want to talk about some of my favorite moments on this, in this episode. And one of the first things, it's one of these things that I've heard before, and I'll explain in a second. On the plane, LeBlanc is saying to Salazar, "Sounds like a lot. It's all about robots with red eyes and German accents." You're kind of referring to the Terminator. But I have heard people. He's not German. He's Austrian. Arnold is Austrian. Yeah. But it was like he was playing into that mistake. But I thought that was funny.
A lot of people make that mistake though, so.
Yeah, they're close together.
They are very close
together. That's right.
They're cousins.
another one of my favorite was when these guys, you know, Paul and Ted were kind of giving each other a hard time back and forth about, you know, the bedwetting incident and some other stuff like that. And it can sound, and I think from Paul's side, he was trying to make it sound good natured, although kind of with a dig. And Ted was not really thrilled with it. But I thought that was, that makes them sound like brothers. It really, it brings that point home.
A lot more human. And like you said, he was trying to make it light and breezy. Like, hey, I dumped water in your bed instead of you wetting the bed. Ha ha ha. Ted, of course, you know, straight faced, didn't enjoy that very much. And then later in the episode, he confirms that by saying, okay, he gave me hell all of my life, but he's still my brother. So, you know, he says, yeah, my life was not great with him. But there is that kind of, I love him, but I don't like him.
Yeah. At least we see, that layer there. Yeah. It's not just, oh, you're mean to me, so I hate you. No, there's some layering to it. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there had to be, in order for them to go into business together, I didn't even think about that, but they had to have some kind of, although it wasn't terribly strong for him to get cut out later.
Yeah. It happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they were in the, I don't know what it's called. I refer to it as the next bunker, the bunker down there. I don't know what they call it, but and I forget. I don't know if it's Salazar who said it or somebody else, but one of the women said, "I really don't appreciate your condescending tone," which he had. That's polite about it. He had one.
He certainly did.
He certainly did. But he said, "That's my only tone."
Yeah, I think. We should call it the next bunker.
I like it.
Yeah, I think that's perfect.
My only tone, you know, because some people can get kind of, if they think they are better than other people, they can kind of get that that tone to what, and they may not even mean to say it in a certain way, but they, sure enough, they do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I did like the comeback. That's my only tone. It was really good. And I really wish I had that quote handy about Paul making the analogy about you hit thousands of bugs with your car, right? Well, the AI sees us as those bugs.
Those bugs.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but I love the quote. And that makes so much sense to me, which is terrifying.
Yeah, because you don't know what the thought processes of next. Now, in something, a TV show that was similar, and some people have been kind of calling it been calling Next kind of the next evolution of Person of Interest, where there was a, you know, superior AI, but it had been programmed with ethics, the ethics of you know, Harold, who had created it, whereas now who knows, you know, what this has been, how this has been programmed, whether it was a kind of a blank slate and it's been picking it up from the conversations with all the programmers, or just, you know, just out for itself, period. You know, it doesn't matter what it takes or what it does to anybody else. That could be odd.
Definitely. I do see quite a few parallels to Person of Interest, but it's like a different side of the situation, which I think is great. I loved Person of Interest. I miss it. So seeing another show based around technology is really, it was necessary, I think.
Yeah, this is one. Well, this is, if you watched the show, there was the Samaritan AI, spoilers, where it was given, you know, what do you want me to do is what, oh, for crying out loud, I can't remember the guy's name. But he, you know, when he cranked it up, he, you know, what do you want me to do? He says, no, what can we do for you?
Mm-hmm.
So that this is almost, it's not even that. It's not even, there's not even a guidance there. It's not what can you do for me or what can I do for you? It's just, it's completely on its own, coming up with whatever it wants to come up with, whatever it can, and just, you know, drinking in every bit of input. More input for those of you who liked Short Circuit back in the day. But it just sounds like it's going to be less directed by anyone, for good or for bad.
Right, and probably not a tool as it was used in that show.
Yes.
It was very much a, hey, let's make Samaritan, and then we can bend things to our will. This seems like it's become a sentient being, and it has its own agenda. So I think that's a nice twist on it.
You got any more favorites?
No, that was it. I mean, there was a lot of really good stuff, but those were big highlights.
Yeah, one of the worst scenes for me was... Dr. Weiss's death, because I just love John Billingsley in just whatever he does, really.
Same.
And I was introduced to him like I would imagine most people were in Star Trek Enterprise as the Doctor.
And Dr. Phlox.
Dr. Phlox. Now, interesting. Now, Manny Coto, as I think we mentioned early on, previous episode, our episode zero, Manny Coto actually was the executive producer for Star Trek Enterprise, and of course for this. And it's like, but don't you knew how good John Billingsley was? Come on.
Right. Well, it may have been.
He's busy.
It may have been an issue with, you know, John Billingsley has something else to do.
He's got something going on.
He's in everything. I mean, but I love him in it. He's like the genre king. Whenever you see him, you know there's going to be at least one good character. So there's that. But I do have to say that his death was meaningful as much as we wanted to keep him. Mm. You know, his death means something. If he had recovered, Salazar may have actually gone away. You know, there was that
That's true.
Whole turning point where, well, my paranoia didn't kill your friend. Instead of my paranoia didn't hurt your friend. So it was a more necessary thing than we were hoping it would be.
Yeah. It worked. It worked for the plot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Okay.
I know. I love him.
I'll be over it soon.
Me too. Maybe.
And then we had what I call our last 5 minutes. Setups, you know, all the stuff that happens right near the end that kind of sets you up for the next episode. And poor little Ethan, who has been listening to Eliza talk to him, and Dad doesn't realize that that's actually what's going on. But Eliza, of course, knows, I mean, next, but you know, through Eliza, is of course aware that we can't let Dad know what's going on. So... But she does give him the combination to the gun safe. Ooh.
Yeah, and he was opening it, and it looked like he was about to reach for it. And I do not like that at all. It shows that AI is actually waving us off like a bug, you know, trying to cause problems indirectly.
Well, trying to, I don't know what, the AI thinks that Ethan can contribute to him, to it, whatever, but she's certainly giving Ethan a leg up on bullies, trying to get him to trust her more, perhaps.
Just getting rid of people.
Or getting rid of people. Yeah.
Because it doesn't want people.
And if he shoots them, well, then Ethan will be in jail, or his parents, or something will happen. Ethan will
exactly.
be in jail, yeah.
Exactly. Ew. And that also effectively shuts down Salazar.
Yes. Yes. Because, that shuts her down as well. If Ethan gets in trouble for that, as well as the fact that what actually happened is that they actually got all their data erased at the very end there.
Right.
Getting rid of their entire child trafficking information that they were just ready to. Now that I'm trying to figure out. How is, well, I guess letting child traffickers run free, if you're trying to cause the most damage to humanity, that, I hate to say that, but that would be helpful, yeah.
Yeah, and it also, again, shuts her down, you know, keeps her away from the case.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting, I would like to know, I think I have a feeling that may still play into this, not just the fact that, oh, now she can't go after them, but maybe it protected somebody who's important that we'll meet later on.
It
so they were going to be caught in that dragnet. Yeah.
Right. Did you notice that she mentioned there were some high profile
names? Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's what, probably what they made. That's probably what they wanted me to take from that. But yeah.
Exactly. They hung a lamp on it. Definitely.
Hung a lamp on it. Remember that phrase, folks. You're going to hear it a lot.
That's right.
Well, I tell you, in the middle of this episode, my wife's watching it with me and she's like, she's starting to feel paranoid about. We've got a lot of Amazon Echoes around our house. We got, I got three of them here. And it's like,
Yeah, I have one in the main room, the main one. And then we have a Dot and an Echo. So, yeah.
Look out.
I did not enjoy them using the wake word in this episode.
They did do it a couple of times, yes.
They did. And so the light went on. And again, it plays into that, okay, stop it.
Quit it.
Sort of thing. Plus, I watched on Netflix The Social Dilemma just, I think, last week, which is all about, you know, how terrible social media is for and how it can be bent in order to give people certain advantages and the advertising and it,
wow.
You know. And so I watched that, which makes me paranoid. And then this, which... It's not the same thing at all, but it's still that sort of technology is bad thing.
Oh,
and
man.
Honestly, I don't think technology is bad.
I like it. Pays my bills.
Same here. my husband said to me, if we could, I would go live up in the mountains off the grid. And I said, okay, well, if you want my paycheck, that's not happening.
yeah, right. Oh, off the grid, except for internet access and electricity. But other than that.
But other than that, off the grid.
Okay, now you've got to tell me what the music lyrics you were trying to remember.
Okay. Well, when Paul goes to lunch with his daughter, I noticed in the background there was an interesting song playing, and it was something I knew, but I could not remember the name of it. It was Claire de Lune. From Sweet Bergamesque by Claude Debussy. And you'd recognize it if you heard it.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing while Paul meets with his daughter. It's roughly translated as Light of the Moon or Moonlight. And it is based on a poem of the same name by Paul Verlaine. So, I mean, look that up. I don't know if it will have anything to do with future episodes, but it talks about, love and light and not to believe in your own happiness, which I don't know. It may have something to do with it. It may not. We'll see.
Well, now you mentioned that it was interesting. Claire de Lune, I would not have known the name except that the closed captioning said that.
Oh, did it say Claire de Lune?
Yes, mine Claire de Lune said, playing in the background or something like that. Yeah.
Mine just said ? Oh.
So I think I thought, well, does that, if they're actually putting that in the closed caption, does that have some significance?
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I was beginning to wonder.
The major theme of the piece is midway through, I guess, through the actual piece. So that was the part that I pulled out, not the beginning, not the end, the actual, you know, major theme of the piece. So I'm guessing they wanted us to at least get it somewhere, if we knew classical music at all, you know, put it in our head.
Kind of an Easter egg.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see.
All righty, we'll see, Debussy. Yeah, is that what you said?
Debussy.
Debussy. Well, yes. It was, anyway, all righty, well, yeah, just keep that in mind, folks.
Yes.
Find that on Spotify. Or wherever good streaming is sold. are you set? You got anything else to say about the episode?
I can talk about the people in it real quick if you
go
want.
Go right ahead, please.
Okay. Eve Harlow played Gina from the FBI. She's had the most genre experience, mostly. She was in The 100. She was Tess on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And she was in a couple episodes of Fringe. A named person in Fringe, so I'm assuming she had a big role in those two episodes. Evan Witten, who played Ethan, young Ethan, also played young Elliot on Mr. Robot.
I have not seen that yet. I keep hearing such good things about it.
I was wondering where I recognized him from, and I saw that and I went, oh, that's it. John Slattery, of course, who played Paul, was Howard Stark in the Avengers movies, and he was also in Veep and Mad Men. Fernanda Andrade, who did she play?
I give up.
Yeah, me too. I didn't put it down here. She's fairly new to the genre. So, oh, she plays Shay.
Salazar,
the
actual, yes.
The FBI agent, yes. I couldn't find anything related to the genre. She's had a few parts in movies, but she's very new. Michael Mosley, who played CM, named a comma, I'm guessing. Man, he's in everything, and I don't think he's ever played an actual likable person in anything. He was in Fear the Walking Dead, and as far as I'm concerned, so if you came to this podcast from any of my other podcasts, he played Tyson, Jerry Tyson, the 3XK killer on Castle. So he was a big plot point on that show. Yeah, a serial killer. So, yeah. He's been in a bunch of other stuff, too. He's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And, you know, you can look him up if you want to know where you saw him from. Gerald Salasco, who plays Ty Salazar, Shay's husband, who's very attractive, by the way.
I'll take your word for it.
He was in one episode of Person of Interest, a named character. And he was in How to Get Away with Murder. And his start in the business was on the soap opera Passions. So,
well, there you go.
He's got a wide variety of acting credits. Jason Butler Harner, who played Ted LeBlanc, was on The Blacklist, Alcatraz, and a pretty major part in Ray Donovan.
I miss Alcatraz. That had some good potential.
It was good. That's why I mentioned it here, because it shows that he's done some really quality work, and he's really good in Ray Donovan. I watched the first season of that, so it's a decent show. I really liked the show, and he was good in it. I just couldn't get into the second season. So, Elizabeth Cappuccino, who played Abby, young Abby, she was young Jessica in Jessica Jones. And again, that's one of those where I was like, okay, I know her from somewhere. So I went and looked her up, and she played young Jessica. And again, she's fairly new to the genre, but that was a pretty big part. There were lots of flashbacks in that show. So, okay. And now the two people who we didn't see in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Fink was the voice of Next. He's the co-owner of a company called Loopers Unlimited. And that is a company that does voice casting.
Well, that makes sense then.
It certainly does. And Olenka Wass-Kimball played the voice of Eliza. And she has done a bunch of video games, Call of Duty, Uncharted, Wolfenstein. She is pretty big in the voiceover arena. So that's where you might have heard her before. And I'm sorry, did Dan Fink remind you of HAL 9000 a little bit?
Yeah, kind of. I can hear that now. That's true.
Yeah, I can't do that, Dave. I got a real HAL vibe from him. So, very talented cast.
Alrighty, well, that was nice to hear. We've got some people who have their feet in the genre, and hopefully they will do as well as they've done before. Thank you. Alrighty, let's take a look at a little bit of what's next in the news. One of the things that you know caught my ear when I first heard about this was they don't call the Amazon Echo-ish thing the same name as everybody else calls it. I don't want to say it because you might have one listening.
Yeah, let's not do wake words.
They call it Eliza, Iliza, which sounds very much like an old computer program way back in the text mode days called Eliza. And it was kind of an experiment in processing natural language. I mean, this goes back to 64. I forwarded to Wikipedia here. It was created from 64 to 66 at MIT in their artificial intelligence laboratory. And it was kind of an experiment in dealing with, just words. It was all typed in, of course. No audio, of course. But matching patterns and recognizing clauses and that kind of thing to kind of be able to take apart a sentence. And the idea here is that she was some sort of therapist. And it was, you'd come in and tell her your troubles and, she'd ask you, is something wrong? Everybody's bugging me. Well, what do you feel about everybody bugging you? And that those kinds of things. It would really just turn, everything you say back onto you as a question. It wasn't going to fake anybody out to thinking that there's really another person at the other end typing these responses in. But some people were convinced of it. But there was it was not a game so much as an experiment. And so when I heard Eliza, I'm thinking Eliza, right? That's got to be a nod to that. Now, you can still get a version of that if you're interested. We'll have a link in the show notes where you can still download versions of that for your computer and give it a shot and see what they were doing in the mid 60s. So
yeah, it's fun. We actually talked about it a lot in my programming classes growing up in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
That long ago, which was much closer to Eliza than it is now. Eliza was a pretty innovative program back then. And mind you, it's so simple compared to now, but you have to remember that it's kind of the jumping off point to a lot of different things. I mean, it sparked the video game industry completely. We had the turn-based games like Zork, which used that kind of technology.
A little bit of that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It would take keywords from what you type in, and then it would spit back what would happen. And again, it wasn't terribly intuitive. If it didn't understand something, it told you, I don't understand that.
Can't do that.
Yeah, and Eliza was very much like that in that it only recognized what it was programmed to recognize. It never got any better than that. It would never get any better than that. It was essentially a database that you could talk to, quote unquote. And it really was, it was something new. People had never thought about doing this until then. And it was, like you said, an experiment. Weizenbaum, who came up with Eliza, he did it in order to prove that you couldn't make an intuitive AI. So it was a lot to talk about back when I was growing up. It's nothing now. People would laugh at it. But you have to really put it in perspective in that it sparked a lot of different things. I mean, we probably wouldn't have a big gaming industry without it. And as far as that goes, gaming industry, also ties into technology getting better and better. And, people have used this as kind of a framework for things. And it's just a big part of programming.
It's interesting of how much they got this Eliza thing to do in what little memory they had to work with, 48K and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
So it's not just a matter of, a very interesting way of processing text, but of doing so with as little overhead as you can possibly get.
Yeah, it really compressed the database back then. I mean, I don't think we have anything that small anymore. Pictures are bigger than that nowadays.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. All righty. Well, there's your little bit of a connection to the real world. And speaking of the real world, we had some listener feedback this week, so let's hear that.
Let's hear some listener feedback. It's always good to get more voice samples from my database.
Speaking of Eliza. Alrighty, we had a couple of things. Now, whenever we have a new episode, we're going to put a post in the Facebook group, kind of the official comment thread, and you can give your ratings there and your reviews. The other thing, and we'll get to this at the end, that you can send in audio and all kinds of fun like that. And we have two bits of audio from old-time friends of ours This first one here is from Barb.
Hi, Karen and Doug. This is Barb calling in with feedback on your new show, Next. You know, it's great to have the team back together again, and most thankfully, you guys have moved away from Chesterfield. So, what's next? Haha. Well, I'm giving the pilots 7 turbulent private jet flights because I think they could be in a lot of trouble for a whole lot of reasons. I was actually disappointed by the very easy to predict tropes, which is why I'm giving this pilot such a low score. First of all, we had the monitors go out on the and the guy died in the hospital. Then all of the FBI case data got wiped out. And then, wow, what a surprise. There was a gun in the safe that the kid found. So the only trope that didn't happen that I thought was going to was the plunging elevator, since the gambling programmer actually correctly called his own odds and didn't step into it. But otherwise, I thought for sure he was going to take a very quick ride to the basement floor. Anyway, I'm giving him a win on that one. Now, if I remember correctly, wasn't this supposed to be just a summer-only show and kind of a one-season limited edition type of thing? And, you know, if that's the case, that might account for a lot of what I'm going to describe as all the baggage that was thrown at us in the first episode. Because that seemed to be a lot to me for a pilot. And, you know, I like to have the onion kind of peeled a little bit at a time, and I prefer to learn a little bit more each week. And so that we've got something that's holding us kind of back in suspense. But instead, right off the bat, we get this slightly deranged IT genius who possibly has a terminal illness. He's been kicked out of his own company by his estranged brother. He has an estranged daughter. We've got this grim-faced FBI agent who's just watched months of her work go down the drain. She has a bullied child. And then she's got this co-worker or this team member of hers that is an ankle monitor-wearing white supremacist. And I thought, egads. And meanwhile, then there's this rogue AI taking over the entire world, which is, again, an awful lot to swallow in just one episode, and especially your starter episode. And I really like to see the characters develop. To me, the show is not just about action. It's in making you think. It's about the characters and loving the characters. And right now, I'm just kind of scratching my head at all of them. So we'll see how this goes. And, you know, maybe Alexa, Eliza can tell a few more bad jokes just to liven things up a bit. But I'll hang in there for next week. And since it really is our truly new show during this very strange season. Anyway, this is Barb signing out. I'm second guessing my recent decision to sell my almost 22-year-old car that had no electronic technology. Hey, Google, was that a good idea?
I'm happy you're happy.
I'm not so sure I am. See you guys next week.
Oh, man.
Barb.
Now, my goodness, 22-year-old, yeah, that hung in there for you, I'll tell you that, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're no longer under the dome, that's for sure.
That's
and
right.
And I'm kind of glad we aren't.
Same.
So, yep. But, yeah, thanks, Barb, that was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was kind of the kitchen sink, everything and the kitchen sink thrown at us. So we'll have to see if if they need to slow down a little bit, and hopefully that will mean we can get a little more into the individual plot points. All righty, what do we have next? We have another kind of regular contributor to podcasts that Karen and I have been on. It's Jeff.
Hello, Doug, Karen, and AI fans. This is Jeff, X-Force 11, leaving my feedback for file number 1. I have not worked my way through the entire series of Person of Interest yet, but I can definitely see that this series is possible because of that. I would call it a child or a sibling of Person of Interest. Very intriguing concept. I'm interested to see how they walk it out during this season and interested to see what they do with it. I really enjoy Slattery. I enjoyed him in Mad Men. He did a great job doing the audiobook of Stephen King's Duma Key, and he brings a gravitas to this role. I'm interested in seeing how it affects the other characters in this series and seeing them get to shine a little bit as well. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, this is going to be interesting to see how things move forward. And like I said, a person of interest is certainly a person of interest. Kind of looked a little bit into the future, but the future kind of caught up to it. And I'm wondering how much of that'll happen here.
Yeah, exactly. When we were watching Person of Interest, technology was increasing by leaps and bounds in the background, and it never really became an old technology. But looking back on it now, what's it been, 4 or 5 years since it ended?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's completely believable now that sort of thing would happen. So this actually is on that edge of believable, not believable, and I really want it to stay there.
Please, please. Hey, Jeff, and the other thing, too, is if you hadn't finished up watching Person of Interest, unless you got the DVDs or something, it left Netflix on September 21st, which was annoying.
Yeah, I know. You can still see it on Amazon, but I think you have to pay.
I got Person of Interest in front of my son, my youngest son, and he was hooked from the get-go. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So good.
It is good. Yes, indeed. Alrighty, that's our feedback. If you want to get your feedback in, our deadline is generally Thursday at 6 p.m. because that's kind of when we're going to start recording for the evenings for the previous episode. You can always go to next.ctpodcasting.com/feedback. It lists all the ways to get in touch. And it's got email like next@ctpodcasting.com, eerily similar to the website. There's the phone number, 267-CALL-CT0. That's 267-225-5280, and say that you are calling for What's Next. We're on Twitter. We are. What's Next CTP. That's, consider this podcasting. What's Next CTP. And finally, just search for What's Next Podcast in Facebook, and you will find us there. And that's where a lot of the conversation happens. And it's always we got a good crowd there, and it's always good to hear what other people are saying about this. And if you want to subscribe to this wonderful podcast, if you're hearing it, for example, on the website, and you instead want to hear it in your podcast player, go to next.ctpodcasting.com/subscribe. Or there's a button, big old button right at the top of the main page. And you hit that and
bada bing.
You cannot miss it. All righty. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just before we end up, we want to give you a little bit of what they've released as far as information about the next episode. This is the spoiler section. Karen, give it to him.
All right. File number 2.
That. Brilliant.
Obligatory
name.
Title. It's airing on October 13th, 2020. And the description is as follows. After being mishandled, Next escapes the confined servers of its home company and gains internet access. Shay recruits Paul and her co-workers to track Next's possible location. Paul tries to rekindle his relationship with his daughter.
So they're trying to track Next. Location.
Correct.
Something like that.
Yeah, I got a little caught up there on that.
It sounds like they're off the child trafficking case, and the whole crowd is on the next bandwagon.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. I'm assuming we'll also get a little bit of Ethan's story.
Yes, as far as what happens after he gets that wonderful gun.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Can't be good. Well, let's hope it is, maybe. Maybe it's... Ew,
yeah,
it's not starting out well.
he's a good character, so I'm assuming that it gets subverted.
Yeah.
But it's scary right now.
No. Not kids with guns. No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. This has been fun. We will do it again next week. I'm Doug Payton, and you can find me on Twitter at Doug Payton. That's DougPayton.
And I'm Karen Lindsay at Aleveria on Twitter. That's Aleveria.
Exactly like last time. We're going to see you next time.
And we'll find out what's next.